Blog Talk Radio.
Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. I am super, super excited for today's episode. We've got a returning guest. He's been on the show once before, but we're talking about something, not cooler, but as cool as before. Our guest today is Mr. Darren Gordon Smith, and he and the gang have a brand new film that just dropped called The Second Age of Aquarius. It's a comedy sci-fi film, and it is very funny. I really liked it. Darren, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on again, and it's great to know that you liked the film.
Oh yeah, man! It was awesome. It was out of sight and groovy. I'm telling you. It was fantastic. Now, this just dropped. It's out on demand everywhere, right? Prime, iTunes, Apple TV, all of YouTube, Vimeo, all of it.
It's just about everywhere. Yeah, it's just about everywhere where you streaming platforms. I also have a soundtrack which is available on iTunes, Amazon, and most places where you get your music. And we have a companion book that's sold on Amazon.
How cool is that? Now, we have links up of to everything. The main website, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all of that. I will be also adding the links to the companion book. We don't have those on the show page as of yet. As soon as the show's done today, those will be up, ladies and gentlemen. Those will be up.
Okay.
And a link to the soundtrack as well. How cool, man. That is so smart, you know, having all this stuff together. Now, this is a project that you and Stacey Lane Wilson, one of my favorite people in the whole wide world, put together, started out. Tell us about it. Who had the idea? Was it just over dinner one night, you guys came up with it? How did it happen?
Okay, well, this is our Second Age of Aquarius. Everybody knows it's our new sci-fi rock and roll rom-com. And how it started out was Stacey Wilson and I, we started out doing a short story together called Phantom Fandom. And that's what became The Second Age of Aquarius. Now, Stacey Lane Wilson, she co-wrote The Second Age of Aquarius with me. She also directed it. And basically, she had the initial idea. She said, you know what? I'm thinking about writing a story, and I don't know anything else except some girl, she's like, makes a computer avatar of her favorite dead rock star, and the dead rock star comes to life. So she wrote a paragraph, or she wrote like a couple pages, and that was like the chapter. And she just throws it on me. She goes, okay, your turn. So after that chapter, I'm like, okay, well, let's see. So we went back and forth chapter by chapter by chapter. This thing involves this dead rock star who's fictitious by the name of Russell Aquarius. And for the most part, she handled the Alberta Stevens part. Now, that's the girl, the young woman, who is a computer coder. She's like an expert person, and she made this avatar come to life basically through some weird mad science thing. We don't get into that, except it just happens that there's this guy in her house who now won't leave. And so a lot of it was like, it came to me to like think, I guess I'd have to say I'm more the Russell Aquarius guy, and she's more the Alberta Stevens woman. And so I guess I get to go through my inner rock star by channeling Russell Aquarius. So we did this whole book. We're like, oh man, or short story rather, and we're like, let's make this into a film. And you know, from that, I thought, well, geez, you know, we keep talking about this rock star, and of course, the guy, when he wakes up, and he was supposed to have died in 1970. He wakes up thinking like, oh, well, you know, it's 1970, and somehow he's just in another groupie's house waking up after another one of his long drug-fueled sessions. But he has to realize this is 2022, and what are all these weird gadgets everybody's got? And who is this crazy groupie? And you know, he's pretty enlightened, except when it comes to being a chauvinist. So he starts to treat Alberta like, you know, she's just some groupie, and maybe what do girls do? Like, I don't know, be like a nurse or a teacher or waitress,
right,
or whatever. He just can't get over like that she's his creator. And it's a touching, hopefully a funny movie, but you know, she's paying that rock star. And so, but she cares for him. She's banging him. She doesn't love him because she knows he's not a real person. But, you know, there's a lot going on. And so when we were doing this, I started hearing the music. This is Russell Aquarius. He wrote these hits in the late 1960s. And so I started thinking of the music. And from that, I wrote the soundtrack, which is his songs, Russell's songs. And I wrote them to sound like they came from the 1960s. And how I did it is by using vintage gear. Great friend in a music studio in Nashville had us use all the vintage recording equipment from that era. So hopefully it sounds really like legit from that era.
Oh, absolutely. There's no, you know, Fruity Loops on this. And not that people would even be able to tell, but musicians, I think, definitely could tell. It sounds like it was recorded back in the day. You know, you don't have those hard gate cutoffs and stuff. It's cool, man. It's very cool.
Thanks.
It almost sounds like you found like some demos or something, some old reel-to-reel tapes that somebody had recorded back then and said, well, hey, this is gold. But you didn't. You wrote it. That's cool. I know that you're a composer and you write a lot of music and whatnot and some big stuff. Is that normally when you're doing your painting, so to speak, do you channel like the vibe like that normally? Or are you, do you, is it easy to go, okay, well, this is the gig, this is the job, this is what we need to accomplish. How does that creative process work? Because it just sounds like almost you just give yourself over to it, you know?
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, you know, I'm sure a lot of us fellow musicians can testify that, you know, if you're really into music, you'll sit down and 7 hours have gone by and you didn't even realize you didn't take a break. You didn't eat food. You know, you're so into it. And I think that's really perceptive what you say about it's not Fruity Loops, FL Studios. It's not what this music was is a departure for me in terms of making music that wasn't really on a grid. And just to explain for a lot of listeners, you know, in the old days, they didn't play to a click track. You know, the bands would play, and they were a little bit looser than they are today. And our ears will hear things and say, nah, something doesn't sound right, because in our minds, everything has to be nudged over a nanosecond, so everything's just perfectly, like you said, gated and all that. And that's
plastic
great. I love that kind of music. Yeah, but I wanted to make something that was loose, that, you know, and there's a fine line between you make loose music versus you don't want to be sloppy. But listening to all this music in from the late 60s, I first of all, I love that music anyway, but I did like a thorough research into this bizarre bands back then, things that I didn't even know about. But one thing I realized is even with, let's say, groups like Vanilla Fudge or Steppenwolf, you can hear just a little bit of lag between, let's say, the organ and the guitar. Sometimes they don't come in just right on time. And you can, you know that because you can hear one channel, let's say it's the right channel, will be the organ on your headphones, and the left channel will be the guitar. And when they come back in on, let's say, Born to Be Wild, it's not totally on that nanosecond like the kind of music that we think of today. It's a little bit loose.
Absolutely.
And that gives that feel, right?
And I'll tell the listeners, that's where the soul is, baby. That is where the real soul lies, I think. Because you're absolutely right, Sarah. You're absolutely right. You know what it is when they made that, nobody had a computer screen with it all, you know, peeked out and everything right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy sitting, if they had money when they recorded it, they were in a big studio and in front of one of them big giant boards that we've all seen in movies with a million, you know, looks like the guy's going to take an airplane off, you know, or launch a rocket or something. But, you know, now it's all on a screen and it's all, and I think, you know, I think, and it's weird too, because people say, well, electronic music did that. I'm like, I don't know. Because if you listen to old Kraftwerk and stuff like that, they were still doing all those different channels and everything. And, you know, there was the lag, the space, the soul space, you know. And I just think it's great. But this music fits into that. It's very, very cool. I really, really dug it. And I did, when I watched the film too, I was wearing headphones when I watched it. And, you know, I kind of picked up a little bit. I'm like, this is, like I said, I thought you had just, you know, were at the swap meet or something and found a box of old, you know, reel-to-reel discs or tapes or whatever. And you know, it was some kind of demo from back in the day or something. It was cool, man. It was
thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You finish your thought first.
Well, I was going to say, since it takes place in 2022, you know, I did the scoring for the film, not just the songs, but I did score the underscore. And I wanted to make a big distinction between so Russell Aquarius, he's either has this old sound, or it's like kind of a retro futuristic sound, like, you know, Future Shock, or, you know, the song Popcorn from the late 60s, early 70s, one of the first synthesizer hits. But I wanted to have a change, so when it's showed from the perspective of Alberta, the character today, well, I have some things that kind of reference modern stuff like UK drill beats and stuff like that. So I wanted to have that juxtaposition of the old and the new.
Well, it works. It works, man. It works. It was cool. It was very cool. And I also liked, you know, Stacey really captured Alberta's, you know, trials and tribulations and the drudgery of the day, of the modern era. You know, you know, Russell's amazed but surprised, you know, what is that in your hand? Does everybody have one of those? You know, speaking about her, carrying her cell phone, like every person does today. Except me, I don't use a phone, but my wife does. That has been the topic. We've had many conversations about that. are you watching this show? Well, put your phone down. How can you watch the show and be on your phone?
I know the feeling. And in fact, yeah. At a certain point, Russell's thinking, I must have taken some bad acid. Like, I don't know, what is all these weird shit that I'm seeing? But he's like, oh, man, I need some enlightenment. He's like, what do you guys do for enlightenment in this modern age? And Alberta has to stop and think about it. She's like, I don't know. I guess people shop and yeah. earn money so they can buy more stuff. And he's like, right. oh, I hate this modern age. And so I wanted to make kind of some comments about things today that are good and bad, things that were good and bad mm-hmm. back in the 60s, you know, and of course, do this in hopefully an entertaining and comical way, because the guy's really kind of like, you know, Spinal Tap meets Jim Morrison. Actually, the guy who plays Russell is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. By the name of Michael Ursu. To my mind, he looks like as if Jim Morrison were being played in a movie by Paul Rudd. And so we're like, he's perfect. And Christina Jacqueline Kalf, she's the lead in this movie, and she plays Alberta. And I just can't say enough about her. She is so funny, but she, you know, she shows a big emotional arc in this movie, and that's a lot to try to carry off with basically two people in a film, not really going anywhere, but we try to just from the dialogue and from the the great acting, I think they really pull it off.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and she's got her issues, you know, with leaving the house and all, and the work issues. She's dealing with a creep at work, Julio, you know, and all this and that. And, you know, I mean, it's the modern era. You know, I'm telling you, I'm watching the film and I'm thinking to myself, and you know, just whenever you look at art or listen to music or what have you, or watch a film, you always put yourself in it, you know. You're like, oh, well, you know. And I was, you know, she was dealing with her stuff, and it so reminded me of my every day when my wife gets home from work. It's just our relationship. I know for 30 to 45 minutes when she gets home, I will be caught up on all the stuff that happens about people I have never met in my life. I know that what's going on, who's having a bad day, you know, all this kind of stuff. Who's trying to do her dirty, you know, and it's just, it seems that that's the age we live in. And I think what's cool is you guys, in a comical way, but not a slapstick way, this by no means, and going into this, I didn't know, because at first I'm thinking, well, is this going to be kind of a John Waters type deal, or how are they going to approach this? And it was campy to an extent, but it wasn't slapstick camp, you know what I mean?
There was some
very cool messaging in it, and I thought it was just done very, very well. You know, good writing, good production, fantastic acting, fantastic. Christina and Michael knocked it out of the park, man. I tell you, old Martin Olsen playing Sid at the end.
Yeah. Oh my God. And Brooke Lewis, you know? Bellis, who plays the mom. And she entered her inner Philly chick for that. I think a lot of these smaller parts, you know, we wanted to make them as memorable as possible, and the actors delivered on that. You're right. We didn't want it slapsticky. It's, you know, it's more of a, I don't know, it's a dialogue driven movie, but. I think it's also a testament to for what filmmakers can do with a little imagination and very little money.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages. listen to this cool episode ad-free. If you're a VIP member, you can become one on my website, www.jamierocks.us, www.jamierocks.us.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is more than just an online store. It's a destination. MetalBabeMayhem.com carries over 150 rock and roll products, including clothing, jewelry, and accessories. Metal Babe Mayhem also offers shrine clothing and alchemy gothic jewelry. In addition, Metal Babe Mayhem founder Allison Metal Babe Cohen is a rock and roll journalist who supports local and national artists with rockin' reviews, interviews, playlists, networking, and more. Metal Babe Mayhem is taking over the world, one shirt at a time.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's R-O-X-X, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com. Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion. Fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and, of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool, and these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com. Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
We did this. Yeah, anybody, just about anybody could do this, you know, in terms of financially. Yeah. You know, you think of, like, production values have gotten so much better than, let's say, even, like, you know, the movie Clerks from 1994, right, with Kevin Smith. Great film. Bargain basement, right? They worked at night. Some of the people are not even professional actors. And even at that, as I understand it, it cost about $200,000. But that's how much things cost back, you know, when you had film and all these other things.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We did this on a shoestring. We paid everybody. It was great. We don't want anybody working for free. But, you know, we pulled in favors too. And I think, I mean, personally, I just think, like, if you have a strong, script that, you know, you can, there's a lot you can do. You can't paper over a shitty script, right? No matter how many car chases you do or something like that. So, we workshopped this, and, you know, we really tightened it up over a course of about 2 years. And I'm very proud of this. Now, I haven't been as proud as doing movies since I did Repo,
which is a classic. I tell you, Repo is one of those. I gotta tell you, Dan, while I got you on the horn here, I have a very diverse group of friends, of people I know and whatnot, and I've got some hardcore horror people. I don't like watching horror movies with them because they're like, well, that guy's spleen didn't explode in the right. I'm like, how would you know? Are you kidding? You know, they just will pull a movie apart. It's no fun to watch a movie with them. They love Repo. They love Repo.
Oh, wow.
Then I have my weirdo art school friends, you know, and my writer friends and what, they're all, you know, eat up any type of dystopian soup you put in front of them. And they love, everybody loves Repo. It is a fantastic concept and film and just a piece of art. You know, and I think this one is right up there with it. I was watching this and I was thinking, like I said, I mentioned, I didn't know if this was going to go with John Waters' route or whatever, but I will tell you where this would be very easy to follow suit of what a lot of John Waters' movies does. Is I think you guys had two rooms. This was like a two location.
Right.
Like two, I don't know what you call it. There was only like a couple things. It was almost Hitchcockian in a way from that point of view. You could put this could be converted to a stage production, a musical, man, Broadway, you know? Very.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And, you know, it's like with Repo, we don't own the stage rights, unfortunately. So, I almost maybe three or four times a year at minimum, I get people who are like somebody in a theater company in England wants to do a stage production, and I can't I can't do it. But of course, I think as you would know, and maybe many of your listeners know, that Repo, the Genetic Opera, has shadow cast fans, people who acted out Rocky Horror style in midnight movies throughout the world. So I did it obviously with a lot of great talented people too, but I'm very proud of it. I am happy that Rolling Stone magazine said it's, you know, up there with the top 25 cult movies of all time. Leonard Maltin liked the film of all people. But, you know, I definitely felt like when I was doing The Second Age of Aquarius that I really like movies that have a strong musical component. To me, that's really what interests me the most. And I think that things that have a strong musical component, they have legs. People want to watch them mm-hmm. over and over again. You know, they know they want to know their favorites, you know, music that's going on. I just think like making a movie that's, you know, I'd love to make a hit movie that's, but a lot of them are just like forgotten the next day. You don't want to watch it again. This one is hopefully people are going to be turned on by the soundtrack, by, you know, there's plenty of things going on that, you know, subtle things in the movie, and hopefully they'll turn on their friends too to this film.
Absolutely, absolutely. Two thoughts, real quick. Years ago, I was a friend of mine. We used to throw these because I don't know. We were hopelessly poor. We were always trying to have better parties than everybody else. We were going to have a cool musical-based film night with all of our friends, you know, all of our 20 friends or whatever. And there was going to be a lot of drinking and what have you, and debauchery and whatnot. And so my friend immediately was like, you know, we were putting the list down because you have to, and placement was very important, we felt, because, you know, after movie four, the party's kind of probably going to be winding down, you know, you're 8 hours in or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah,
you know. Only the real crazies were going to be around at this, hanging on at that point. And my friend was like, well, what about, you know, we got to put Phantom of the Opera, or not Phantom of the Paradise, Brian De Palma, and Phantom of the Opera. What am I thinking? No, Phantom of the Paradise. And I'm like, well, you know, Swan's great and everything, but I'm sorry, Repo has to come before Phantom of the Paradise. That's just, you know, I'm making an executive decision here. And it did.
Well,
and it was a great success.
Good. Well, I take that as a compliment. And, you know, the Phantom of the Paradise was up there in the top 25 cult films. We when we did Repo, when we started it out, which was started out as a stage show in L.A. and off-Broadway in New York, we would always bill it as kind of like Blade Runner meets Rocky Horror Picture Show. And we're so happy that when we look at this list of the top 25 cult films of all time, there's Rocky Horror in there and there's Blade Runner. So, you know, I do feel like we did something right.
Well, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. But back to music, you are so right with music and film. And I got in this, during the pandemic, I got in this kick where I've been watching all this weird stuff on YouTube. And when I say that, ladies and gentlemen, believe me, your mind's going way weirder than you know, pull it back a little bit. Not that weird stuff on YouTube. No, but I've been watching just different stuff. And one of the things that I really enjoy is a lot of these kids are making these reactions. They'll watch a movie and put, you know, really you only see about 5 minutes of the movie. It's all just little clips and them talking about it. But whatever, I guess that's how they get around the copy. I don't know. I'm not in that. It's not my thing, but I do watch them. And I've been watching these kids, these young kids discover the movie recently because they go in these like little patterns. They've been watching Rocky, the Sylvester Stallone Rocky film. And so I've been watching, you know, a lot of Rocky clips. Great movie. It's a fantastic romance movie. A lot of people don't realize that was definitely more of a romance movie than a boxing movie. It had some boxing. But, you know, the thing is what I realized watching that is the music is so, and not just the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, the running up the stairs music, but the lonely, sad, and dejected, and, oh, my life's just terrible type music, you know, the lonely, sad music. Yeah, it's in there. And I was thinking to myself the other day, I'm watching one of them, and I'm going, this movie would be terrible without that music, because it wouldn't flow that character along. And I think the music, the scoring and whatnot in this, and the music in The Second Age of Aquarius, does that also, it moves the story. Not that the story needed help being moved along. It just adds to it, you know? And
well, thank you.
It's really good. Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, I almost forgot. I'm so excited. We're sitting here BSing and talking, which is good. It's what we're supposed to be doing. But we've got two tracks you sent over from the film. We've got Blue Movie and the Neverending Cosmic Tour. Let's play one of them, man, so people know what we're talking about.
Okay.
What do you think we should play?
Why don't you play Blue Movie first? This is
fantastic.
This is Russell's hit. I call them unreleased hits. But Russell's hit from 1968.
Fantastic. Let's check this out, everybody. This is what we're talking about. And listen. Listen to that little half a nanosecond lag in there.
Stag freak, drag chick, suck it to me, baby! Sign high, let the joint get down.
boxes with twin beauties, triple entendre, blue movie, menage a trois, avec foie gras, chic au pair, got little derrière, truck your lucky monkey down to Coho Susie, Patrick Honky Donkey, blue movie, camera frames, shaggy manes, nicely tamed, cuffs and chains, stag flip, drag tricks, fuck it to me, baby.
It's from the soundtrack of The Second Age of Aquarius. You got to see this film, everybody. You got to see it. Oh, and I should add, when you do see it, you have to review it. Every place that streams a film now has a little thing where you can leave a little, you don't have to write a doctoral thesis. Just leave a little, you know, statement, what you thought, what was cool and whatnot and about it. And you can do that. It doesn't cost you anything. And it will... save Stacy coming to your house and just slapping you hard if you don't. I'm kidding, of course. But she will in thought. She will in spirit. she's pretty hardcore, Darren, about the reviews. Have you noticed?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I appreciate if anybody... You know, this is a little movie that could. This is a movie, I think, that has a lot of heart. And it is going to be something that's going to go by word of mouth. So I do appreciate it. Anybody who likes it to share that with other people, you know, because this is basically it's supporting all of us. It's all independent filmmakers. People have a different idea of what a film means. People who like to put music with film and put it front and center instead of just way off in the background somewhere, you know, and these actors have put their heart and soul into this too. So, you know, yeah. And everybody, well, I just hope everybody, we are finding our audience, which is great. We won some awards at the Zed Fest in LA, not the least of which we got the best screenplay. And our two actors got best actors. So, you know, we're getting some recognition, and it really does feel good. And it makes me, you know, go forward because Stacy and I have other things that we're working on too. So, you know, it's all good.
Well, and success for an indie film, what a lot of people don't realize, you know, you mentioned the next projects and whatnot. So how this works usually, folks, is you know, Darren and Stacy will take a meeting with, you know, some guy in an office somewhere. Could be over at lunch. Who knows? But usually it's in an office.
Yeah.
And it's called a pitch meeting. They have an idea. They have a, you know, maybe a little 5-minute concept video they've done and, you know, kind of push the idea. And one of the first questions that people ask in the meeting, the person they're talking to, well, one of the first things they think is, well, what's their track record? What have they done?
Yeah.
Can they deliver what they're saying? Because before I write a big check here, I need to know that, you know. And that makes sense. It's logical.
Yeah.
So a successful film, you know, oh, well, these are the folks that did The Second Age of Aquarius. You know, my kids play that soundtrack constantly. I can't get it out of my head. That goes a long way. That helps with that pitch meeting. Pitch meeting goes a lot easier.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, when you got something, and when you have the right ears, you know, to receptive for doing stuff like this. I mean, a lot of pitch meetings would be like, well, who do you sound like? Or what is that? What film are you patterning this after? It's like, well, why would I be why would I even spend my time doing anything that patterns anything? That just makes no sense to me. It's like, I get it that from a business point of view, coming up with a market-based approach to creativity makes some sense, which is to say, you know, I don't work like that. I just work and I create stuff, and then I'm trying to think like, well, how can I market this? But that's after. It's not like, well, these people, here's my favorite artist, and I'm going to sound just like them so that I know that I'll have a niche. I know
Absolutely.
That makes a lot of sense, but that's just not how I've ever worked.
No, man, you can't. And you know, we're working in innovation here, folks. We're starting trends, not following them. You know, that's the key.
Right.
And that's really where the success comes through. You know, if you look at a lot of stuff that's just in whatever genre, you know, whatever art you're talking about, let's talk about film. If you look at something that's, you know, when George Lucas sat down with Star Wars, he didn't say, well, I'm trying to make a, because it wasn't in Star Wars before it. He had Star Trek, but way different, you know. He said, let's
right.
do a Western approach. You know, and the thing is you're right. The right people have to be receptive to that idea and say, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to gamble. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there was somebody out there who thought the Beatles weren't a good investment.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that guy's still around. He's probably jumped off a building at some point by now.
Probably.
You know?
He never lived that down. The guitar groups are on their way out.
Yeah.
I often thought about doing a book called What's Your Excuse? And basically you take all these bad things that people have said about now successful people, like the Beatles, like you said, or, you know, Lucille Ball's acting teacher is like, you just don't have any talent for acting. You know, like all these things
right.
that give, just to say, well, you know, what is your excuse then? These people started out with, you know, nobody loves you until everybody else does. Then all of a sudden it's like, I was your first fan. It's like, you were? Right. So, but somebody's
so
got to have the balls to get out there and take the no's and the rejections and the people who say, you know, it's like Repo. It's like, well, you can't do that. You can't have an opera that's sung beginning to end and expect anybody to watch it. Yeah. So, you know, we did what we wanted.
The great thing about rejection, and I'm telling you, for those in the, you know, starting a little band or something, or trying, you know, you're pushing the rock up the hill, I'm going to give you a little advice here. The great thing about rejection is it makes fantastic rocket fuel if you use it as such. You know, I love when somebody tells me I can't do something. I'm like, oh, Rick, thank you, because stand back. Here we go, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing better.
I like how you put it, though. It's rocket fuel. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it is that. It's that fantastic log that Doc threw in the steam locomotive in Back to the Future 3. Get things going. Get things going. Oh, man. Well, this is a fantastic film, folks, and it's out. It is out streaming. You can watch this. You can get it. You know, it's over. You get it anywhere, wherever you watch. I know on Amazon, I think you guys aren't charging enough for this. What is it, $2 or something? Watch on Prime Video.
Yeah.
Somebody has Amazon. I know you do. You know, we've been through COVID. Everybody has Amazon probably started COVID. I'm not saying that. I'm kidding. But everybody sure has it now. And I'll tell you something else. Everybody knows how to use a Roku player now. I don't get emails from older people I know going, how do you stream that? No, everybody's got it. They got it figured out. So everybody definitely can watch this. $2 on Amazon Prime, I'm telling you. Or you can own it. You can buy it. You don't just have to rent it, you know. How cool is that? And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages. Listen to this cool episode ad-free. If you're a VIP member, you can become one on my website, www.jamierocks.us. www.jamierocks.us.
My Love Shack Apothecary online shop has everything you need to build a special gift for yourself or someone who needs a little pampering. I hand make all of the products in small batches using only plant-based ingredients and therapeutic grade essential oils. Whether you choose one of my curated sets or want to build a custom gift set, My Love Shack Apothecary has everything you need to send a little sunshine to someone today. Please visit us online at www.loveshackapothecary.com. That's www.loveshackapothecary.com. As well as online on Instagram and Facebook. Links are in our website.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beatty, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierocks.us.
Now, I know that this just released, but I have to ask, because you both are so good at what you do, and everybody in this, everybody involved was fantastic. Are the gears turning for the next project at this point, or is it too early to say?
Stacy and I are working on the next project, and it's another music-based project as well. And this time it involves the 1980s music, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
You got me.
Yeah, it's going to return to our horror roots too, and it's another time travel horror film. These two 20-something people of today. They're, you know how like you get these people love the 1980s and they dress up like
right.
Flock of Seagulls or whatever,
right.
And they keep saying, "Oh man, I wish I were around back then." And I keep telling them, "No, you don't. I was there. You didn't have cell phones.
Cool.
You had to
right.
think. You know, every thought a human person could think in their life while you're standing in line in the post office. You had bar fights about who's in this movie and who's not. When nowadays you don't have to fight about it. You just look at your little, you know, cell phone. So these guys basically they go back into a time machine. They've been bet that they can't even last a fucking weekend in the 1980s. And so basically this is a horror film. They go back to the 1980s. And, of course, all the Hillside Strangler makes an appearance, as does Phil Spector, the producer. And so it's going to be lots of horror and lots of fun and a lot of digs at the 1980s, too.
You are so true. It is so right. It is so true. I tell people this all the time. Everybody I know that's younger, they think it was all, you know, MTV. They think that me and my friends would sit down to watch MTV and just jam out on some cool metal or some cool British synth music or something. Yes, MTV played that stuff about once every 2 hours. You were listening to Barry Manilow and Air Supply the rest of the time. It was horrid.
It really was.
Landscape.
And to say nothing about a political landscape, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But
well,
you know what?
Tough.
It was tough.
People
but you know what?
Realize.
No, I don't think they do. And you know what? I mean, in as much as, you know, I love music from any era and I love music from today. But there wasn't like in the 1960s and 70s, there's so much great music, but
they were
still the minority. You know, if I did all this study and I can tell you what was on the charts in 1968, 69 and so forth. And, you know, the biggest song of 1969, think of all the great music that was back then, right? You got Abbey Road, something, and you have the Rolling Stones and Let It Bleed,
man,
and Jimmy Shelter.
How could you not be inspired? You know,
right.
Everything was happening.
But that being said, you got Led Zeppelin, all these things from 1969. The biggest song of 1969 was "Sugar Sugar" by the Archies. So I'm just saying, the crappy stuff, it exists everywhere at any given time. There was some guy named Dr. Hook in the 70s. He just almost every year he had like a top 10 hit. And it's like, you never remember any of that music today. Now everybody's like, back in the 70s, it was great. You had Pink Floyd and blah, blah, blah. Mm. It's like, yeah, you did, but that wasn't on the radio, you know, wasn't on AM radio, that's for sure.
I remember when I think of, like, what you're talking about in the 70s, you know what's horrid. You know, when I hear that they play this, because I just was reading an article where they were playing, they were having some kind of truck protest somewhere, I can't remember where it was, and they were like, they're playing Barry Manilow to just get these people to disperse. And I'm like, well, that's terrible. Poor Barry. How would you like to be Barry Manilow? You wake up and you read that article. You know, that's And besides, if you would have found that, what was her name? Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life.
Yes. That's so funny. That was the first thing that came into my mind when you said that. Yes, that was the biggest song of 1977.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy. But, you know, there was also in the, you know, doing the research for the 60s music for Second Age of Aquarius, you know, I found these all-girl groups that I'd never heard of. Black psychedelia, you know, all these psychedelic black psychedelic bands. And then, like I was saying, there was the first synthesizer hit was in 1969 with Popcorn. And I have, and it was re-released as a hit in it. Yeah. And it, I, on our, we, on our Russell Aquarius, YouTube channel, I've posted, in addition to seeing art videos from the film, I've posted cool stuff from the 1960s that a lot of people have never heard of, like great, great artists, you know, like that the synthesizer group, which is, by the way, it was on like, I don't know, like Dick Clark or something like that.
Right.
And they're playing this synthesizer music. These hippie people, they don't even know what to do. They're trying to dance to it.
Where's
like,
the spaceship coming at?
Yeah, exactly. But people don't realize, you know, there's so much out there that was not, you know, wasn't, the people don't know about that, that's worth a second look. And I also posted a lot of 1960s, you know, drug movies, cult films, you know. And so I got a bunch of trailers and you can check out at the Russell Aquarius channel on YouTube.
I did like in the film. When and you guys slipped it in there, it wasn't a big thing, but I noticed it, and not just from my own wild youthful past, but he was she had showed him the documentary about what had happened to him, and they were talking, and he had kind of made this joke about Robert Plant stealing some of his lyric lines and whatnot, and then they're like, when we return, Robert Plant will talk about how he remembers him falling into the torturous drug addiction and all this and that. And his look on his face was just embarrassed. I felt that look a few times in my life. When you wake up the next morning and you're like, oh, God, what did I do? I'm embarrassed. I don't want to see anybody from last night. He got it. He brought that home.
Well, and,
I thought it was
and
fantastic.
Thanks. With the whole thing is that Russell Aquarius died in 1970 on stage at the Gettysburg Music Festival, where he was when he was electrocuted. So basically, he doesn't know any of that. You know, that's why he's got to be shown this behind the music thing on Russell Aquarius. We do have a lot of jokes about Robert Plant throughout. We kind of make that a through line of how Russell Aquarius thinks that Robert Plant stole everything from him. So I hope we're not sued by the real Robert Plant, but hey, you know.
No, I think he would laugh. I think he would laugh because he probably knew a lot of people that didn't make it through, like poor, you know, Russell. Oh man, I'm telling you.
I remember I saw, you know that movie Almost Famous, the Christopher.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember that. I'm sorry, Cameron Crowe. Cameron Crowe is like playing it like for the rock stars, friends of his, which included Robert Plant. And he was like a little bit leery about playing it for Robert Plant because there's a scene where the guy dives off into the thing, you know, into the pool and says, I'm a golden god. And later the character says, no, I never did that. Well, out and when they screened it, Robert Plant yelled out from the audience, he goes, well, I fucking did it. So he owned up to saying he's a golden god and doing a swan dive into a hotel pool.
Well, why, you know, why? That's just it. I think a lot of people with, you know, the rock star mythos trope, if you will, that's a terrible word I hate. But, you know, a lot of these guys, it's so interesting to me when you see, especially with social media now, when something bad happens, a rock star has a bad time, something happens, you know, they OD or wind up in a rehab, you know, something happens bad. And people are like so surprised. They're like, well, why would they do that? They had everything going and everything was fantastic. I'm like, because number one, drugs are fun and they're not used to having millions of dollars at their disposal, you know?
Yeah.
That's
why
they do it. Are you kidding me?
And you probably
do it too.
You probably would. I mean, Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, I remember he's saying that cocaine is God's way of telling you you make too much money.
Exactly.
And he's like, he's so lost. There's a guy who's lost millions and millions to cocaine, so he knows what he's talking about.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and obviously I'm not pushing anything. I don't personally like, hallucinogens.
No, I don't do any of that anymore myself.
Yeah, I don't either. But, you know,
I'm too old.
But if you did it, don't be bullshitting like, you know, I hate this kind of revisionism. I'd be like, you know, White Rabbit had nothing to do with drugs. Or I love Ted Nugent saying, like, Journey to the Center of Your Mind with the Amboy Dukes, that song from the 60s. He's like, oh, no, it had nothing to do with drugs. How could you even think that? And it's like, why don't you just own up to it? Either, if it wasn't about drugs, then you're an idiot. You know, like, I mean, you can't have it both ways. Like, you talk about drugs and doing stuff to this journey to the center of your brain and all this weird shit's going to happen. It's like, if you didn't associate that with drugs, that almost makes you even stupider.
Right. Exactly. And it's, you know, and again, I'm the same way. I'm not, you know, trust me. I when I say drugs are great, what I mean are drugs are great until they're not. And, that happens a lot quicker if you decide to go down that path than most people will honestly tell you.
You can go bad quick. Then you can go bad quick. And that's obviously like, you know, what kind of drugs? You know, pot is obviously it's a very different thing than crystal meth.
Oh,
but, you know, I think it's funny, though. I mean, if you look at the music that was playing at rock festivals in the late 60s, from Monterey Pop to Woodstock, you know, I know there's a lot of confluences, you know, a lot of factors involved, but I have to think that, you know, LSD and those kind of drugs had a way to maybe, it was part of it, and it opened people's minds so that look at Woodstock. You have obviously Jimi Hendrix, and you've got folky groups like Richie Havens, but you also had sitar, you had Ravi Shankar, you had Shauna Na, the 50s doo-wop group, you know, you had Sly Stone, and people were listening to all that. They were just, you know, they were open to that. It wasn't just one genre of music like you generally hear when you go to a rock concert these days. So I don't know. Maybe it's drugs. Maybe it's boredom. They had nothing else to do. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. People, you know, I will say this completely. You know, drugs were definitely part of that cult, that culture, that pop culture. Absolutely. You would not have had a David Bowie or the glam rock scene or any of that without drugs. It was straight edge glam rock. Are you kidding me?
I think there's. You know, and maybe it's not the drugs itself, but it's kind of just a metaphor, I guess, for people opening their minds and listening and doing and being open and receptive to things they normally wouldn't be. So, you know,
absolutely.
I mean, for good or for
absolutely.
Bad, right? There's a bad part of that, but certainly cocaine and those movies from the late 70s, like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, you can't tell me that's an anti-drug message right there.
Yeah, just play that for somebody. Don't stop.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm going to turn into George Burns. What's going on? So true. But it's, you know, every generation, every cutting edge artistic movement. I mean, you can look at the 30s and the rise of jazz and big band and whatnot. You know, take the speakeasy aspect out of that. You know, the nightclub out of it. You know, you wouldn't have it. It wouldn't work.
Right.
You know,
and it wouldn't
would
work.
Nobody was sitting around their garage playing free-form jazz. Wasn't happening, man.
Yeah, you're right. And it is interesting to see, like, you know, everybody likes to think, like, well, if I were around in the 60s, I would have been, you know, in the anti-war movement and marching in the civil rights movement. And it's like, well,
yeah,
maybe.
I don't know, man.
But, yeah, you don't know. It's like, it's easy after the fact to say, like, all this stuff, but. You know, honestly, I don't want to get political here, but I can say that doing ads on Facebook, you see what people like in classic bands, and you'll see a lot of political conservatism going hand in hand, and it's like it's not the rock stars of that era. They weren't they won't tell you to vote for Trump, but you know, it's people who are like. You know, their father said, oh, you know, Stan Kenton and, you know, the Dorsey brothers. Now, that's music and
right.
blah, blah, blah. Nowadays, these guys growing up and they're like, well, you know, Led Zeppelin. Now, that was music, not like this crap today.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
I got so many older conservative friends that are like big Boss fans, you know, and I'm like, when nobody wins or when everybody wins, we all win. Or I can't remember the quote, but I said, how do you guys like Bruce Springsteen? Have you ever listened
yeah,
to
I know.
Music, the lyrics?
Right. And he's basically telling people, don't listen to me if you're going to be like that. And
right.
you know, the whole absurdity of people saying, well, you know, it's, of course they can be liberal because they got all this money. So they can talk like this. Well, you can't talk like anything unless you have a lot of money. So, you know,
right.
honestly, if I were given a political opinion, nobody gives a shit about what I have to say. You have to be a multimillionaire to actually have some piece at the table of the media. So guess what? It's only going to be what you call hypocrites talking, you know, if they're going to give a liberal bent. And, you know, honestly, what's better to be, you know, to want to change the world and be a human being and be, you know, have your flaws, or be a
people,
dick
right.
who doesn't care about, like, changing anything. And you know, they try to make some sort of moral relativism between, like, a Mother Teresa and Adolf Hitler. You know, it's kind of like,
right.
you know, this Trumpism, like, whataboutism. It's like, oh, yeah, well, look at Biden. He's doing, you know. Again, I don't go in a political bent, but I do say, like, there's this thing of, like, a difference between being wanting to do good and failing than a person who doesn't want to do good in the first place. I don't see them as being on an equal par.
Absolutely. And, you know, the big thing that kicked this anthill in the first place, I agree with you. We could do a political show sometime, though.
Yeah.
But the big, how this anthill got kicked in the first place is we had a black president. People freaked
yeah.
out, man. And a good
yes.
black president. That was the thing. Educate great, did great, you know. You know, it was, and that's what freaked people out about. Again, race issues in this country, you know. And if you do have a problem with race, I want you to definitely watch The Second Age of Aquarius. and look for the final act in the film. You'll love it. It'll be right your cup of tea. Fantastic. And please leave a comment and share your viewpoint on that. I would love to see that. I'm just happy that art affected you. That's all I'm saying. No, it was a really good movie. I really, you know, bringing it back, Darren, I really, really think you hit it out of the park with this. And I can't I can't wait to see the 80s one, man. Fantastic. Whatever I can do to help, let me know, man. Let me know.
Okay.
I wish I was a movie producer. I'm not. But, you know.
You're an amateur futurologist, and everybody needs that in the movie business.
Maybe we'll go to Vegas some weekend.
We'll take you to a meeting, our meetings, and say, well, you may not think this is going to be really big, but here's my futurologist, and he knows it's going to be really big movies. So, come on, write your checkbooks.
Exactly. Well, the great thing, if we go to Vegas, you know, yes, Vegas is full of fancy hotels, but me and Darren both know somebody who lives there and just got a brand new house and everything. So lots of room.
I know.
You know, that she'll wake up and go, I've got two Russell Aquariuses in my house. What is going on?
I can't get rid of them.
No good at all. We'll ask her is, what's for dinner? What's for dinner?
Yeah. What's for dinner, babe? Can you just clean up this crap too? Because I don't like to see a lot of mess around. Do you know Aaron? Aaron Kai, her boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
artist,
I don't know him. I haven't had the pleasure to meet him personally, but I see his posts and stuff on social media.
He's great. And I was thinking of you because you know you're an artist and. He's also a very talented artist, so good for them out there.
I'm going to check that out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool
his thing is he says, his tagline is, I paint the movies. And he paints, like, stills of, you know, like, let's say Bullet or, you know, classic movies. And it's just phenomenal. He's a very talented guy. So, yeah,
awesome.
I'm giving
a lot of money
for Aaron Kai. Yeah.
You can make a lot of money doing that. Check his workout, folks. I'm telling you, Father's Day is just around the corner. And you know what a lot of fathers have these days? And they all love it. This is always a home run. If you're looking for a cool Father's Day, they all have man caves. So whatever your father's passion is, might be film. Might be Steve McQueen in the movie Bullet. I'm telling you, I've painted a lot of man cave paintings. You can't, but people always think they're like, oh, are those the sexy women you paint? I'm like, no, those will never go in a man cave. You know, that will never fly. Those are bachelor paintings, man.
Right, right. Charles Bronson. Charles Bronson. Now that's a man. That's man cave material,
right? I'm serious. What comes to mind is I did a big Gene Simmons painting, and you know the guy who it wound up in his man cave, and they're you know successful. They've got a good business and whatnot. He sent me a picture, and it's right next to his Kiss pinball machine. I'm like, yep, there you go. That's where that needed to be.
Wow, that's
the
great.
Home it needed. You know, I was slightly jealous because I have no pinball. I'm not at that point yet where I have cool. Let me ask you this, Darren. Now, you've had, you know, a successful movie guy and all this and that. Do you have cool toys?
Cool what?
Toys like pinball machines and stuff?
I wish I did. You know, I have cool old instruments. I collect instruments, a lot of ethnic
instruments
and stuff. Nice. But it's funny you should even say that. Here, I'm doing a whole show about Aaron Kai. I hope he's listening. He actually was the pinball champ of New York, like in the 80s. So
really?
He goes to, there's some sort of bar in Las Vegas where they have all these old pinball machines. Yeah, so he, you know, I guess he keeps his skills up on that.
He's like a gunslinger. Everybody's thinking they're cool and can do their thing, and then in walks Aaron.
I love it. And he's not even deaf, blind, and dumb. And he still can play. He still gets those flipper fingers.
I love it. I'm gonna definitely have to get him on the show. I'm gonna be bugging Stacy about this.
Because
I know that's the way to do it. I'll put the idea in her ear. I'm deep, ladies and gentlemen. Oh man, that is cool. I tell you, the big thing in speaking of the '80s, when I was a kid in the '80s, when I grew up, I said, you know, I knew I was going to be successful doing something. I didn't know what, you know. But my goal, my barometer of success was I was going to have one of those, you know, they had video games everywhere, but every so often you'd go into a place and they'd have a sit down table video game, you know, with like Galaga or Pac-Man or whatever on it, didn't matter.
Uh-huh.
But I knew I had made it when I got, and I have yet to get one of those tables. I don't have room for it. My wife.
Oh no.
Those are so funny.
The sit down ones. I remember the Pong game, you know, and it was expensive even back then. It was like a quarter or something. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. You lose on a game these days, you haven't spent any money. Big deal. There's another game. Back then, in the hard days, son, we had to walk five miles in the snow to Google. Yeah, we had to stand in the snow. Yeah. Googling meant something very different. A selfie meant something very different.
Very different.
It was something you
were trying to avoid selfies.
Exactly. A selfie could make you blind, son.
Why do you think Darren got into bands and music?
We can avoid selfies, you know, to meet girls.
That was the whole point.
I definitely, the doctor said, you need to find a hobby that'll get you off your autoeroticism. And I'm like, well, why not film? I was watching some show the other day where this guy's like, I've been given so much in the world and I just feel like I want to give back. So I'm becoming an actor. And it's just like the idea of like giving back to society as a musician or actor. Well, I kind of like that.
Yeah, there you go. It reminds, you know, it's weird in this country too, because the artists and whatnot, at least I have found, like my first time I ever went to France, to Paris, you know, people ask what you do, you know, especially if you're a guy. You know, it's really your job is your identity almost. It's really wrapped up in that. And, you know, I tell people, oh, I'm a painter. And they're like, first thing they say is, well, cars or houses. And I'm like, well, it depends on how big the check is. But I'm down for painting either, you know. Then they find out. And the reaction is, oh, let's keep an eye on the silverware. We're in Paris. People, you get treated like a dog. Well, right this way, sir, here, right up on the, by the stage. You know, it's like you're a lawyer or something. It's different in this country. I don't know if it's that way with musicians.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's not like, well, what's your real job or, you know.
What's the base job?
I don't know about all countries, but I do think like, a lot of difference in Western Europe than the United States is here people kind of humble brag about how hard they work, right? I mean, you know, and everybody, it's not just whatever stockbrokers or whatever, but even among a fellow artist, they'll be like, I haven't taken a vacation for X number of years. Well, in Europe, that's not something to brag about. That doesn't sound like a smart, you know, it's not like you work hard. Yeah, it's like, well, I didn't hear you. Did you say you enjoyed your life? Like, what? We can't do that. That's being lazy.
Hard work.
Yeah,
you can play
right.
Hard.
I can only enjoy my life.
Part.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to do anything to enjoy it. You don't, there has to, you know, what is that, like a predicate to, you know, once I have this, I'll be happy. You know, I definitely think, you know, that happens everywhere in the world, but I do think it seems to be even more endemic here in the United States, that attitude.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this country, I think, and again, not to get a political bent or anything, but I definitely think that there's a – I grew up in Metro Detroit, and so it was very obvious to me from a very young age that it was pumping out workers for the factory. You know, that's really what – like in my high school, nobody was encouraged to go to college, you know, maybe a couple kids. So this kid will be a doctor, maybe, you know, but really go get a job. Your uncle's a union steward, go get a job in the factory. And, you know, you'll get a boat and an up north cabin. And when you get really successful, you'll get a house in Florida. And that's where you'll go in the wintertime. And that was really the thing. But I think in the whole country is kind of in the video game called America, you know, work. It is just drummed into people. And,
yeah.
You know, there's no, and that, ladies and gentlemen, for those sending emails, is why we have no live shows next week. I'm taking the week off. My wife.
I saw that.
Week.
Yeah. Where are you going? Where?
Well, we're not going far. We're just going over to the Gulf side of the state. There's a real fancy big art museum over there called what is it? The not the Remington. It's the I can't think of the name of it now. The Ringling is what it's, the guys who started the Ringling Circus made a whole boatload of money, and before they lost it all, they started a big art museum. So there's a big pinky out fancy dancy art thing that, you know, takes up, I don't know, 200 acres or something. And
really?
My wife wants to see it all. Yeah, so we're going to look at fancy art and, you know, harumph a lot. And that's what we like to do on our off time. But, yeah, it'll be fun. But, yeah.
Where is
my,
it?
Sarasota? Sarasota area?
Huh, okay. Wow,
yeah.
I have to look into that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll send you some links and stuff. It's pretty cool. And there's some resort thing we're staying at, and she's set it all up. And it's, you know. But, yeah, it's funny because a lot of the PR people I deal with, they're like, you're taking a week off? What is that?
Yeah.
You know, are you kidding me? Did somebody die? Has there been a –
Yeah, exactly, right. You know. That's the first thing. It's like either you're dying or somebody you know is dying. That would be the only reason to take off work.
Absolutely.
But I mean, that's
like,
great.
I'm
so
you working too hard.
Yes, know? Exactly. Well, I tell your wife, I say happy birthday.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely will. But we do that. We take a usually, and it's funny because people, I think, right into what you were saying, about once a quarter, at least three or four times a year, we take a few days, at least sometimes a week, and go do something. You know, we work real hard until we can, you know, it's nice. That's the carrot on the stick in our particular case, you know.
Right. But, and it's not all about trying to work as hard as you can so you can retire. You know, it's like, well, why not be enjoying your life and doing what you want to do now? You may have to work till the rest of your life, but I'd rather do that. That's not really work anyway. It's what I would be doing if I were on vacation.
I'll tell you, a long time ago, I learned, well, here's the big secret in my life. I never thought I would make it to, I didn't think I would make it to this age.
Yeah, me neither.
Like,
yeah.
Every day I wake up, I'm like, oh, another day, bonus.
I know. Well, yeah. The Zach Kasich, who was he owns Wild Feather Studios in Nashville, the one who did the recording and engineering with us and mixing. When he was like something like 13, he was diagnosed with serious cancer, like Hodgkin's disease or something like that.
Ooh.
And he didn't think he was going to live past 20. And now he's like 30 years old. But he's saying like every day is like, a bonus day to him. Every day above ground is like, you know, it's that much more sweet to him knowing that he didn't even expect it. And I was thinking, I should really be like that more often. I don't really,
but it's hard.
You know, I need to.
It's hard to get.
Yeah, I need to feel more. It really is. Yeah, it really is. And we actually, you know, a gentleman by the name of Sham Andre Byron, we put a dedication to him at the end of the film because he passed away last year unexpectedly. But he was one of those kind of people that literally gave people the shirts off his back. If somebody said, I love that shirt, he literally gave it to him. He did all these things, and he died actually helping his uncle move. And that was just the kind of person he was. When we went to his memorial service, which it was at the Whiskey a Go-Go, by the way, in Sunset Strip. Totally appropriate for this guy. He was a rock, you know, he was a musician and artist. But all these people, they were like, somebody's like, raise your hand if he drove you to the airport. There must have been like 25 people raised their hand. He goes, raise your hand if he drove one of your kids or your spouse to the airport. There's like another 50 people raising their hands. Mm. It was like, I just thought, you know, to the extent that I can
want to
be
that memory.
I want to be, yes, exactly. And, you know, it really did, his life really, you know, means a lot to me. And I think what he did, trying to every day doing what he'd call a random sham, his name was Sham, random sham act of kindness. I just thought, you know, maybe, I don't know if I could be that good, but at least I can try. So I am trying.
Absolutely. And that's all we can do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of people who passed and whatnot, I did notice the set design had a real cool poster in her apartment in the movie. And I thought that was very cool when I saw that in the background.
The Ventures movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
A lot of their music
he was
in
a
my
good
teams,
guy.
Man. I'm telling you. You know.
It kind of sounds, what is the song that plays in the beginning of this show? It sounded kind of like a Ventures type of thing, or a Dick Dale.
You know, that was just some, when I started doing the show, I actually bought, it cost me, I don't know, $80 or something, but they sent me all these CDs of royalty-free music to use in a podcast, you know? And so that was, I think, the 11,000 30-second little clip that I listened to. And I'm like, that's it. That's it.
I like it.
I used to change them every couple of months. And people are like, oh, you always got some new stuff. I haven't changed that in 3 years, you know, because I don't want to listen to all those clips again.
It sounds like spaghetti western, like, you know, and Enrico Marconi type of thing. I like it.
Absolutely. And it's, well, at the time, maybe it's probably been longer than 3 years. At the time, I used to have, there was a PR company I used to do a lot of work with, and I think they since went out of business because I don't hear from them much anymore. I don't know, who knows? The world's weird now. But I was having, I had a lot more country western acts on the show, too. In addition to rock, you know, just it was this PR company dealt in that. And so they would come across the desk a lot. And I thought, well, this music fits all of it. It could be country people, guests on the show, or rock people, you know, whatever. It's got a Tarantino vibe to it. And we don't have any country people anymore, but the song's still there. Because I'm lazy. Anyhow, Darren, I have kept you so much longer than I was supposed to, but I really had so much fun today. Thank you so much for taking time out to be on the show, and you're welcome back anytime, man. Anytime.
Well, thanks. It was great talking with you, and have fun in Sarasota at that place. It sounds really cool.
Yeah, I've never been. The Salvador Dali Museum's there also, I think, where we're hitting as well. I from what I understand. I don't know. I'm not in charge in our house. I just work here. You know,
you're going along for the ride. Yeah.
Exactly. I got a bossy Italian wife. What can I tell you? No, it's not that bad, folks. She's a peach.
Yeah.
Anyhow, good luck with everything. Break a leg, and I will. I'm going to stay right in touch, and we're going to see how this goes, folks. You've got to check it. We've been talking about it for the whole past an hour here. The Second Age of Aquarius. It's out on streaming. I want you to watch this tonight. Tonight, all your shows aren't on yet. Everybody's on vacation, so there's nothing on. You could watch a rerun of American Ninja Warrior, but they're gonna go across the jungle gym set. That's all I'm telling you. Watch something new and interesting. The Second Age of Aquarius. Plus, none of us can pronounce that one guy's name anyway on that show. Anyway, this is a fantastic film.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime, man. Anytime. Folks, we will see you. We're on tomorrow. Speaking of which, we've got a fantastic, if hair metal 80s is your thing, man, we've got the fantastic band Nova Rex on tomorrow. They got a brand new singer, John Bisha. He's, you might have known, he was singing for the Babies there. And now he's also singing for Nova Rex, or only Nova Rex. I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow. And that's going to be a heck of a show. So tune in for that. That's tomorrow afternoon. We will see you then. Have a good one, everybody.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks' Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.